Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Scary stories have been with us since the first storyteller spun a tale of warning and danger. Often these stories were used to keep young ones safe from dangerous situations. Sometimes the stories were told for just plain fun. What do you think about scary stories? What were the spine-chilling stories you heard growing up? And how do these stories compare to what you find beyond tribal borders? Join us for a spooktacular show straight from the telltale heart of Native America, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Métis and non-status Indians in Canada are before the Supreme Court, pushing for recognition and access to government programs and services. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it's a case that began 16 years ago.
Dwight Dorey is the National Chief of the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. He represents about 600,000 Métis and non-status Indians in Canada. Dorey says he knew the process that began 16 years ago would take a while, but never this long, despite the legal wrangling and attempts by the federal government to block progress. This fight, he says, is about clarity and equality.
For the Métis and non-status individuals, the people out there throughout the land, from coast to coast to coast, it's a matter of due respect, it's a matter of recognition, and it's a matter of not being forgotten anymore. And finally, it's an issue of having that right to be consulted.
Clarity would also determine whether his group falls under the jurisdiction of the federal or provincial governments. In 2011, a federal court ruled that Métis and non-status Indians do fall under federal responsibility. But Ottawa appealed that case. A new ruling last year found that Métis people could stay under federal jurisdiction, but non-status Indians could not. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Members of the Native American community in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and their supporters are marching downtown tonight to take a stand against racism. The Red Nation, an advocacy group, is hosting the event on the city's first Indigenous Peoples Day. Coalition members are calling on city leaders to abolish Columbus Day, which they say is a racist colonial holiday. Melanie Yazzie is a co-founder of the Red Nation.
On October 12th, we honor all of our relatives and ancestors who have gone before us to lay a path so that we may live and continue to fight against the system that seeks our elimination. And it marks the beginning of a resurgence in this historical moment nationwide of a strong, skilled, vocal, and highly organized Native political presence in Albuquerque. This is why, on October 12th, we are reclaiming Albuquerque for Indigenous people.
Civil rights activist Jewel Hall says the Indigenous Peoples Day recognition is a landmark for the city.
The genocidal legacy of Columbus against Native American people and African American people must be rejected and abolished. Our community is joining other cities that are saying no to hate and to bigotry.
The Albuquerque City Council approved the October 12th recognition last week. Six of nine council members signed the declaration, including President Ray Garduño.
I'm with you, not just 100%, but I'm with you in the street, in the boardroom, in the council chambers. And let me tell you, you are welcome there as long as I'm there. And even after I leave, I will make sure that what we have gained, we don't lose.
A number of local groups are showing their support for Albuquerque's Native community, including women's groups, peace and justice centers, and student groups. Other cities recognizing Native Americans include Lawrence, Kansas, and Portland, Oregon. Navajo Nation President Russell Begay is applauding New Mexico's congressional delegation for asking President Obama to declare an emergency for the tribe due to the Gold King mine waste spill. Begay says last week, New Mexico's U.S. lawmakers sent a letter to Obama urging him to take action on the Navajo Nation's request. Recovery efforts continue for Navajo people in the Four Corners who were hit hard by the August spill. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by WanderingBold.com, providing American Indian crafts and supplies since 1969. Shipping nationwide, virtually everything you need to powwow is at WanderingBold.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. It's our pleasure to have you with us today. And we got a question. Do you like a good scare? Well, if you do, you're not alone. We know many people like to get the goosebumps, the creeps, and the willies from a scary movie or frightening story. And many stories from Native America might make you a little jumpy or think twice about going out at night alone. And they are a part of our Native storytelling tradition. Our imaginations get a chance to run wild, but often there is an important purpose to telling these stories that some would call scary. And many storytellers know these stories have deep implications for psychological development based in moments of tension and release. And some of it, they say, is for overcoming your fears. What do you think? Well, we want to hear from you. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And today we have a couple of storytellers ready to share some of their talents. And we do want to turn it to you as well. What do you feel is the purpose of so-called scary stories in Native culture? What spine-tingling stories were you told as a child? And why do you think people want to hear these kind of stories? Join the conversation. Phone lines are open. And the number to call is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And it is our pleasure to kick off the hour with Eldrina Duma, and she's with us today on the line in Texas. And Eldrina is a former classroom teacher turned professional storyteller, and she travels throughout the United States telling stories. And she is Laguna, Tewa, and Hopi. It is our pleasure to have her here with us today. Good day to you, Eldrina.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. And Eldrina, you know, in the intro, we talked a little bit about stories that might get your blood going or make you think twice about going out at night. And I just want to start with, you know, your thoughts on, you know, why is it? Why do you think people are attracted to these kind of stories?
I often wonder about that. I think we just have this naturalness about us that almost like the scary part of hearing a story just kind of gets our blood going, our imagination running wild. There are times that I have learned through the years that now that I'm older, it's kind of like, oh, I don't want to hear those stories. And so now my days are sometimes I kind of hesitate even to tell a scary story. So with me, I think it's just that the excitement maybe of that it brings to our being. I'm not really sure. I think that changes through time, too.
And you know, folks, you can chime in on that, too. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. You know, what attracts you to these kind of stories? We want to hear from you today, Native America. You can also send us your comments to online or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Eldrina, just the power of story. I think I'd like to hear a little bit about that, too, that, you know, storytelling is definitely deeply woven into our different tribal communities. Anything you want to tell us about, you know, why you feel storytelling is important, even in the spooky season?
Yes, I think the kind of the direction that I'm coming in is more from the educator's point of view. As I travel throughout the country, I have heard and seen so many people of all ages that do not know the history of the United States and even of other countries that they come from, especially their families and their families' history and traditions, the languages, even their names, what their names mean and where they even come from. It seems like they have just gotten so used to hearing words that that words don't have a deep meaning in their thought process anymore. So story connects us back to who we are. It's something that my grandmother always used to tell us and tell me, is that I don't know how far you're going to go outside of our land. I don't know who you're going to marry and where you're going to live, but I always want you to remember us and remember to tell our stories. Remember the times that we spent together and the things that we tried to teach you. And we might not be here for your own children, but pass those things on to them so that they will get to know who we are, even though they might not get to see us in person. And so as I got older, I started to understand the meaning behind that. And at that time, as a little girl, you know, you don't imagine these old ones not being a part of your life anymore, or even your friends that you grew up with. And sadly, that's been the part that's what has happened to me. I've lost so many of my elders that I grew up with. And now I think back, oh, if only I would have known that he was a code talker or that she went to Chicago as an interpreter, you know, all of these things that I think about. And I think, oh, these were the things that I could have asked more questions about. But sadly, I don't have them around to ask those questions.
And so, you know, it just makes it all, you know, more important, you know, that we are listening with big ears to different stories and, you know, even the personal ones of people we know. And it's always exciting when we decide to turn the hour over to storytelling in Native America. We always hear a blend of different things. You know, some stories are handed down through the generations and others, it's simply a story about somebody you know. And so, Eldrina, we appreciate you for giving us your take on storytelling and why it's important in Native America. And we also invited you here today to reach into your bag of tricks, your bag of storytelling, and share one that some say might be fit for the season. Eldrina, we're going to go ahead and turn it to you and your storytelling.
Okay. Well, there's a story that came about with a situation that happened with me and my young family when they were little, and we always went camping, and I always wanted to tell them a story. And I came across a story that I thought would be too scary for them, but and it was just a very tiny, short paragraph of a story. And so in order to bring it to life, I went ahead and used the bones of it, but created it into something totally different. And so this is my version of that short paragraph of a story that I had come across years ago. And forgive me because I do not know the name of the book or the author, and the librarian could not find it for me again. And so here it is. There was a young man that decided to return to his family's house in the mountains. The thought of it falling apart saddened him. When he was younger, his parents raised him and his siblings on their tribe's land. He learned to work hard with his hands to hunt, grow crops, cut down lumber needed for their needs and others. But when jobs were hard to keep and hard to find, the parents moved the family to the city. Left behind were family members and friends. So the thought of returning was exciting, even though it was just him and his dog. It would be like something just like the old times. He would repair and fix up the rundown house and plant a garden. The first stop was to go to the community store to pick up food and supplies that he needed for the first week. As he was checking out, the cashier remembered who he was. And as the young man talked about fixing up and eventually staying at the house with his dog, the cashier let him know that the old lady with the pointed fingers had been seen in the area of his family's home and land. The old lady? You don't believe that story, do you? Why, I sure do, especially since so many dogs have gone missing since she was spotted. You know, the old ones used to tell us that there would be a time when she would return. They say that you can hear her as she approaches because she makes a noise that is irritating and makes the dogs go crazy. Just be careful. Lock your doors. Keep the curtains closed at night and keep a close watch on your dog. Off he drove, and even though he knew the story was not true, he could not get it out of his mind. Irritating noise, huh? I don't like irritating noises. As the days passed, the house was looking good. He fixed the roof, replaced the windows and doors, and made sure they had strong locks. But he forgot the curtains. Oh, well. I'll get them when I go for more supplies in town. Next, he cut enough wood to sell and use for the winter months, just in case he decided to stay long. When he went to his field, he noticed that something was taking his crops. Whatever it was, it left footprints, and what appeared to look like something was being dragged. One hot day, he opened the windows to let the mountain air in, and after supper and a hard day of work, the young man fell asleep on the couch. He awoke to the growls of his dog. When he opened his eyes, the dog was standing by the front door. And without thinking about the time of day, he opened that door and the dog darted off as if to chase after something. When the dog could no longer be heard, the young man ran out calling its name. Then he heard the most irritating sound that vibrated through the air. All at once, his dog came running past him from the woods. He turned and ran after it, thinking it was hurt. But it wasn't. It was just frightened. And as they both ran into the house, one went under the bed and the other locked the door quickly behind and waited in the dark room on the couch. The sound of footsteps came onto the porch. A step, then drag. Step, then drag. It was at this time that he realized that the windows were still open in the dining area, but it was too late. There was a silhouette of a hunched-over person standing in the front window. Her hands came up around her face, and as she peered into it, on both hands, her pointed fingers seemed to have very long fingernails like spears. "Go away," he shouted. "Leave us alone." "All I want is something to eat," she said. "I know you have what I want." Her words only added to his fear. His dog came out from under the bed and was ready to fight. It ran to the door, scratching on the bottom. The old lady began to laugh and say, "Here, doggy, come out to see me." The young man reminded himself that his grandmother always told him to stand up to what he feared, but I don't think she ever met the old lady, he thought. Still, he got the courage to face his fear. He tied his dog up and told it to stay. "I have to do this on my own." The young man stepped out onto the porch, and looking right at him, two arms' length away, was a pitiful-looking old woman with the longest spear fingers that he had ever seen. When she looked at him, it was as if her eyes were like magnets. He could not look away. Then he lifted up some dried meat as an offering in friendship. The old woman grabbed it, and before it could be taken away, she devoured it, as if she was starving. And that changed his thinking about her. "Why, you're just an old hungry lady," he said. "Yes, I am. What did you think I was?" And he told her the stories that everyone spoke about her. People, they fear most what they know little about. "One last question I have," he said. "Why do you have such long fingernails?" "Oh, these." As she lifted one and pointed it to him, he stepped back as she started to approach him. Don't be afraid. Just listen. And with a quick flick of her wrist, one of her spear fingers came up to her lips, and the most irritating sound could be heard. And that is my story of Spearfinger.
Eldrina, that was great. We do appreciate you sharing with us. And folks, what do you think about that story? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Does it remind you of something you heard growing up? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And what about some of these stories being told so that we can face our fears? What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. Eldrina, wow. What a twist at the end. A funny twist, too. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you enjoy about telling that story.
Well, you know, one of the things that I try to do is because of my own experience as a little girl, I was so fearful of the dark that it just enslaved me. And it took such a long time for me to overcome my fear. But my grandmother pretty much was like the person in the story. She knew about this fear from a very young age, and she tried to talk to me about it. And she told me, you know, as you grow up, you need to overcome these things, because if you don't, the way of the people sometimes can be very mean, and sometimes people can use those fears to control you. And so I know it's hard for you, but you need to somehow overcome this, and don't be so afraid. But it was hard. It was hard as a little kid, because it seemed like everywhere you went, someone was always telling a story, especially right before you had to walk home by yourself in the dark. And back then, they didn't have a lot of streetlights. And so my imagination just always got the best of me. And so in this story, I wanted to add the suspense and allow the children's imagination to do with it in their minds what they knew from the short time that they've been on Earth. But then at the end, I kind of wanted to protect them also, to let them know that sometimes our imagination can get the best of us and create images that are not necessarily the outcome of the story.
Very nice. Thanks for that, Eldrina. And folks, you know, do you turn to these type of stories for the same reasons? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Eldrina, what kind of reactions do you get from young ones when they hear this kind of story?
Well, usually at the very beginning, especially when I look at my audience, it depends on the age that I'm telling to. If it's adults, I'll approach this a little bit different. But if I even see the youngest ones there, I try to protect them from the very beginning, and I let the adults know too, because as a parent, you know, you want to protect your child. And sometimes in a storytelling setting, they don't know that a scary story might be included in that setting. And so most of the times I tell this story around the campfires and to anywhere from third to, you know, college age students and even older people. And so I try to use my body language and my voice, but I can always see how they kind of tend to get closer to one another. And if the little ones are sitting with their friends and they have an adult with them, they will get up and go and sit by that adult, and the adult will kind of embrace them and hold them close. And so, and then I usually try to, you know, just use, once again, that body language and the voice to create the suspension of the story. And then at the very end, when they find out the outcome, you can just almost see their whole body get relieved, and they laugh, and they laugh at each other because they're sensing each other's fear.
Yeah, I think we got tense a little here in Studio 49 for a moment, but it was good. We're really awake now, Eldrina. And you know, have you ever had kids say, You know, can you tell it one more time? Do you ever get them to, did they enjoy the experience and they're asking for more?
Yes, and usually sometimes when their parents, if it's something that their parents come to annually, an event that I get invited to, a lot of times they will say, are you going to tell that story about the old lady and her pointy fingers? And I'll say, you know, is that one of your favorites? And they say, yes, I want my friends to hear it. And so I will, if it's not in something I was going to tell, I'll make sure I put it in.
And Eldrina, do you think that, you know, these stories belong any time of year, not just when it's around the Halloween season?
I believe so, especially this one. This one can lend itself to a night of evening tales, and even to children that you sense being fearful of something, because I think in this story it teaches us many things about ourselves and how we can allow our imagination sometimes to create images that are not really there.
Very nice. And Eldrina, you tell it very beautifully. Folks, if you'd like to join the conversation or just even talk to Eldrina and tell her about the story that she just told, how it made you feel, you can call in. Our phone lines are open. And today we are sharing stories. And if there is a certain story that growing up, you know, really got your spine tingling, call in and tell us, you know, what was it about that story that made you think twice? Or if there were certain characters that you learned a good lesson from, about maybe even facing your fears, call in. We want to hear about it. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And we just heard from Eldrina Dumas. She's with us today. She's a former classroom teacher turned professional storyteller who travels throughout the United States sharing stories. And maybe you caught her on the storytelling trail. And do you enjoy her type of storytelling? Call us right now. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Eldrina is going to stay with us. She comes to us from the Laguna, Topi, Hopi, and Tewa Nations. And if there are storytelling events that are going on in your community that you want to let others know about, you can call in, give us the details. When are they scheduled and who is going to be telling stories? Feel free to share that kind of information, too. We're interested. It's always great to hear about storytellers throughout Native America. And maybe you even have a storyteller in your own household. Are some folks working on a whopper to tell as we get closer to Halloween? You can tell us about those too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you have any questions for any of the storytellers that we bring to the hour today, feel free to call in and ask their advice on maybe even putting a little suspense in stories you like to tell. We'll be back. For many, sharing their journey from addiction to sobriety is a key to recovery. Sharing the worst parts of addiction can be challenging, but it can also be hopeful. Have you found value in sharing your recovery story with others? How did it help you? And what about the person you told? Join us for the next Native America Calling.
funding for Native America Calling provided by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, supporting Medicaid expansion. It's good for Alaskans and Alaska's economy.
And by the National Congress of American Indians, reminding you that your vote counts.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and it is our pleasure to have you with us today. And we are hearing some stories today throughout the hour. Some say they're fit for the season of scare, trickery, and mystery. And what are your favorite Native stories that tend to keep you on nerve or make you even quicken your step on a dark, cold night? We'd also like to know why you think they should be added to the scary files of storytelling. And do you think that they're important to our Native cultures? Give us a call. Tell us about it. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. And today we are joined by Native storytellers who are sharing their frightful stories with us today. And maybe some of the moments in the story we heard in the first half reminded you of one you heard years ago. Who told it to you? And do you wish that you could tell it as good as them? You can give good storytellers a shout out today, too. On our hour, our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And when we think of some of these stories, what about the lessons we learned? Do you remember a story that really set you straight? And now maybe you're passing on some of those stories to your young ones. And maybe one of those stories has also helped with overcoming fears. We want to hear from you, Native America. Give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And with us today, we have Eldrina Duma. She is in Texas, and she is known through the storytelling circuit for her skills. And she comes to us from the Laguna, Tewa, and Hopi Native Nations. It's our pleasure to have her back with us. Good day to you, Eldrina.
Hi, how are you?
We're having fun. And Eldrina, we're about to bring in our next storyteller here. And anything you want to say about why, you know, it's exciting to hear stories from different people?
Well, I just love stories. I can just sit there. And what I enjoy about hearing other storytellers from across the country and the world is how our stories are very much the same. It's almost like they have, you know, even though we come from different cultures, there are stories that are very similar. And it amazes me how story travels. And I had asked an uncle of mine at one time, I told him that I was listening to other storytellers from other nations. And I said, you know, these stories sound very much like some of the ones that we tell. And one of the things he said to me was that boarding school days sometimes had that effect on story. And I asked him to explain. And he said that whenever we were little and we would be afraid or we would get lonesome, we would tell each other stories from our people. And then whenever we came back, we would share those stories with our families. And at times, we did not remember what tribes these children were coming from. And so it was as if those stories were coming from us. And so sometimes that might have been a way that they kind of crossed over to each other's culture. And so I thought that was a very interesting thing that he had mentioned.
Wow. And maybe you share a similar story. You can call in if you have a story from another tribe that was gifted through maybe even your elders and they learned it in the same way. Call in, share. We want to hear about stories today. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take a call. We have John in Fort Worth, Texas. He is connecting to us online, and it's our pleasure to have him with us today. Hello, John. You're on air.
Hi.
You're on air, John.
Okay. Eldrina, we met long ago at the Texas Folklife Festival in San Antonio at the storytelling area. And I think at the time you were artist in residence at Paladuro Canyon. Is that correct?
Well, I wasn't an artist in residence, but I did help out quite a bit there at the canyon.
Right. I tuned in a little bit late, and so I didn't hear the first 20 minutes or so of the show. I was wondering about that story that you told. It's the same vein. It's about threatening children into behaving, and that your family and extended family would threaten you with the casino spirits. And
yes.
About one evening that you were, I believe, it staying at some relative's house, and the kids were awake late, and you started hearing little spooky sounds, and started thinking about what your parents and other elders had been telling you.
Yes. Well, actually, that was actually something that happened because I happened to be up on top at First Mesa, and it was a night that the dancers were kind of singing their songs and stuff, and we were supposed to be asleep, and we weren't. And so we had heard things, and our uncle had told us, you know, he warned us, you know, go to sleep now, you know, and just stay in your bed. And so, of course, my image and my thoughts and stuff like that couldn't imagine what was out there. And so later on, my grandmother explained to me what had gone on. But I remembered as a young girl, because I was new to the land of my father's people, I didn't know everything that was happening. And so anyway, that was something that I was reflecting on.
And, you know, sometimes I think it takes us a good point. You know, we learn a lot of lessons when we're young, and sometimes it's even just understanding our culture more. And, you know, I keep going back to what you shared earlier, Eldrina, about fear and overcoming it. And I think we learn good lessons when we hear some of these stories and even hear the heart of it. I do appreciate your call there in Texas. And again, folks, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848. Well, let's go ahead and move to another nation. I want to go ahead and welcome another gentleman to the hour. Sequoia Guess is on the line with us today. He's traveling. He's on the road near Nashville. And Sequoia is a member of the United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians in Oklahoma. And he's a traditional storyteller and recognized tradition keeper by his nation. And it's our pleasure to have Sequoia with us today. Welcome to the hour, Sequoia.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm very honored.
And Sequoia, you're near Nashville. I'm sure you're not cutting a record with any country stars right now, but we appreciate you joining us.
They wouldn't let me.
No. You sound like you got a good recording voice, but I do know you have a great storytelling ability. And Sequoia, you know, we got it started today with Eldrina telling a story, and you also have one, but you kind of got a disclaimer for folks. So Sequoia, let's jump right into it. Go ahead and tell us more.
Okay. I'm kind of known for scary stories wherever I go, and usually when I'm before an audience, I ask the audience what they want to hear. Do they want to hear a funny one, a historical one, or a scary one? And 90% of the time, they will say scary. And it don't matter if it's kids on up to adults. They want to hear the scary ones for some reason. And as I mentioned, I'm kind of known for scary stories. So I'm real popular around Halloween. But I do tell one story that is, I say, is the scariest story I know, and I do have a disclaimer on it, and some of the other stories that I tell, too. I kid the parents. I say, well, this one has a parental advisory to it, and I'm sort of joking, but I'm really not, because I have told this story at schools, and the next day teachers have told me that parents have called them and asked them, you know, what are you telling my baby over there? They were scared to go to sleep. I've told a story at Boy Scout jamborees, and I've had some of the Boy Scouts crying, just not the little guys, but some of the older ones too. I've told a story, you know, at different venues, and At one school, there were three boys sitting right up front, and they were huge, probably football players, and, you know, they pumped iron and everything. And by the time I got through with the scariest story I know, they were sitting under their desks. And so I do tell the parents, you know, if you want to hear this one, you know, that's cool. If you want to take your kids out while I tell this one, that's cool, too, because just like Aldrina said, you know, we want to protect the young ones, even though even the scary stories, they do have a moral or a lesson. Most of them do. And we don't want to scar, you know, the little ones in any way, but we want to teach them the same things that our elders taught us, even through the scary stories, you know. So I do warn people, you know, that some of my stories are a little bit tense, but afterwards they're well worth it, because one 10-year-old boy walked up to me one time after I got through telling stories and told me, which I deemed the greatest compliment that I have gotten in my storytelling career. The 10-year-old boy told me, listening to you telling stories is better than watching TV. And that just went straight to my heart, and I've never forgotten that boy. And I just want blessings on him for blessing me in that way. You know, so even though I do tell scary stories, I mean, I love telling them. Grandma told me them, you know, and I'd say about 80% of the stories that I tell, I learned from my grandma, especially, you know, most of the scary ones I learned from my grandma or other elders of the family. So,
well, we appreciate you sharing. All right, Sequoia, take it away.
To share?
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Okay, this is a story actually that my brother, his name was George, and he was about 2 years older than me. He's passed on now. He passed on back in 2004. But this is a story that he shared with me that happened to him when he was about 7 years old and I was five. And it was the first time that we moved into this house in the town where we live. Mom and Dad had bought this house, and it had weird rooms to it. I never really understood the rooms that the house had until later on. I'd say about 10 years ago, I finally found out that the house that we had moved into used to be a hotel, and the hotel was a two-story house. And the top story had caught on fire, and they put it out. And rather than rebuild the second story, they just put a roof on it and sold it as a house. So that's why it had weird rooms to it. Well, the first day we moved in, Mom and Dad stood me and my brother there at the front door, and Dad said, "Okay, boys, go pick out your rooms." And we went running through the house and checking out all the rooms. I picked a room way in the back. My brother picked the room that was right in the center of the house. Later on, I found out, after I learned that it used to be a hotel, that room that my brother picked was an office, which was why it was in the center of the house. But it never really occurred to me to ask him why he picked that room. But before he passed on, I was visiting him, and he brought it up himself. He said, "Did you ever wonder why I picked that room?" And I said, "Yeah, why did you pick that room?" And he said he picked that room because he was going to put his bed in a way where he could look out his bedroom doors, see across the living room and out this front window and be able to see the front yard. That's what he liked about that room. He could just lay in bed and see the front yard. Well, that first night that we were there, we all went to sleep. And George said something woke him up way late at night. And as he lay there, he started hearing thunder, and that's what had woke him up, the thunder. He said pretty soon he noticed flashes of lightning out that window that he could see the front yard through. And then pretty soon he heard the rain hitting the roof. And in between the flashes of lightning out that window, he said somebody went and stood at that window. He couldn't tell who it was. All he saw was just a figure standing there. And he said at first it scared him. But my brother, he had always been sort of a logical type, you know, always looking for the logical answer for everything. And even though it first scared him, he said it came to him that that was Dad watching the storm coming up. And so he said he laid there and he hollered at Dad. He said, "Dad, is that a bad storm coming?" And he said, "Dad never moved, never said a word, just kept looking out the window." So George said he tried again. He said, "Dad, is that a bad storm coming?" And he said, "Dad never moved, never said a word, just kept looking out the window." And then he said he got up out of bed, and went to his bedroom door and stood there and tried again. "Dad, is that a bad storm?" But he said, "Dad never moved, never said a word, just kept looking out the window." So finally, George said he walked across the living room, stood behind this man, and he was just getting ready to reach up and touch him on the shoulder when outside, in the front lawn, boom! Lightning hit all of a sudden, and George said it just lit up the living room like it was daytime. And that man that he was about ready to touch looked down at him, and he said it wasn't Dad at all. He said it was some old man, had long white hair, a white beard, a white mustache, wrinkles all over his face, and where his eyes were supposed to be, there were just holes. He had no eyes. And as soon as the lightning flash was gone, George said that old man was gone too, and George was standing there in the living room by himself. He said it scared him so bad he went running into Mom and Dad's room and jumped in bed with them and stayed there the rest of the night. In the morning, he said that Mom, at the breakfast table, he said that Mom asked him, "What happened last night? Did something scare you? Why'd you come running into our room and jump in bed with us?" So George told her about seeing this old man in the living room. Told him about the white hair, the white mustache, and everything. And I remember that part because I had just come to the breakfast table myself, and I remember Mom asking him what this old man looked like, and George told her. And I remember Mom looking down at him, and she had this weird look on her face. And she said, "That sounds like that mean old medicine man that got hit by lightning last night." Now, George and I couldn't figure out if what he saw that night was the ghost of that medicine man, or maybe he saw what was going to happen to that medicine man. We couldn't figure it out. And when I tell this story, I tell the folks listening, think about it. If you figure it out, let me know, because I still don't know what he saw that. At least that's what George said, okay?
All right. Thank you very much, Sequoia. And
sure.
Sequoia, you know, I think your story allows us to really think about, you know, what's truth? Where do we belong, you know, as the people listening? And it really gets you thinking. Sequoia, you know, how important is it when you are telling these kind of stories that, you know, you keep us always guessing as the listener?
Well, that's part of the fun. You know, I've been telling stories for almost 35 years now. I started right after Grandma passed on. And like I mentioned, you know, I learned most of my stories from Grandma. And all my life she told me all these different stories. And she lived, I'd say at the most 30 yards away from me. And every evening she would call me over and tell me all these different stories, but she would always end on a scary story. And so I would have to walk back across the yard in the dark, with this scary story running through my mind. And half the time she would have me so scared that, you know, I'd ask her, you know, "Grandma, watch me while I cross the yard." And I'd get about halfway, and I'd turn around and look, and sure enough, she'd be standing there at the doorway watching, but she'd be wearing this real big smile on her face because she knew she scared the something out of me, you know? And it was fun, even though it was scary. And I believe that's part of the allure of scary stories, is you can get scared, but you're still in a safe place, you know? Because people like getting scared, but they know they're still safe. You know, they don't have to really worry about it. They can get lost in the story. And I like the idea that when you're telling stories, that the people that are listening are watching what's going on in their mind. And so they come up with all these other, you know, visions in their mind, which I probably never even thought of. And a lot of times people will come up to me afterwards and say, you know, and ask me different questions about the stories. And usually it's about the scary stories. And they will ask me questions that I never really even thought of, you know, or maybe I thought of once or twice, but never really gave it much thought. And so I think, you know, people love scary stories because they like to get scared. And they're, like I said, they're in a safe place. They know they really don't have to worry, so they can just lose themselves in the story.
And Sequoia, I also wanted to get your thoughts, too, in the story you just shared with us. You know, you took it real close, you know, even to your brother and your mother. What happens when we, you know, bring those kind of elements into storytelling? You know, does it make it more believable?
I'm not sure if it makes it more believable, but I do know that a lot of times when you tells a story about somebody you actually know to the audience, it makes it more believable. You know, to me, the stories that I tell, like that one about George and the scariest story I know was about Grandma, what happened to Grandma. And this story, another story that I tell that happened to a good friend of mine named Rosie, and I take those as real stories, that stories that actually happened. Because just as Grandma and other elders have told me, you know, why would we lie to you? You know, there's nothing in it for us, you know. So these are stories that actually happened. And so I take them as truth because, I do think of them as you know, why would they lie to me? You know, there was no money in it for them or anything else, you know. So if anything, it just showed me what, you know, how scared they got, you know, and in some cases, you know, what a coward they turned out to be. But I tell my audience the same thing, you know, I take these stories as true because, you know, why would they lie to me? Why would the elders lie to me? Why would they make up a story like this if it wasn't true? In a story that puts them in a kind of a vulnerable spot for them. You know, showing how down to earth they really are. You know, because they got scared, and you know they weren't, you know, superheroes or anything else. You know, in the stories, they reacted just like probably you and I would react. And so I think that's what people like about it. The people react just like they would react.
Certainly. Well, thank you for that, Sequoia. And we got a call on the line. Let's go ahead and hear now from Mary Ann here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She connected to us today on KUNM Radio. Mary Ann, thank you for your call.
Hi. What an interesting subject. I am a Navajo, and when I was small, we had a very large bedroom, so all of us kids slept in the same bedroom with our mom and dad. And every winter, they would tell us these traditional stories that were thousands of years old, and they would include animals, they would include the landscape, they would include religious information, and they were funny, they were exciting, they were never scary. We went to sleep comfortably, and I just thought I'd better share that because I don't think that my parents ever told us a scary story. They were always about values and morals and how we should grow up and not be greedy and not be mean to lesser people and be kind. And I just needed to share that because the two stories I've heard, they're not very traditional.
All right, Marianne. And you know, that I think that's the beauty of what we do here on Native America Calling, that we're able to hear from people from different communities, and we're also able to share, you know, the beliefs from our own community and why we have different storytellings. It's always exciting to hear. And Marianne, we do appreciate you for adding that to the hour as well. And believe it or not, folks, we have been together for almost an hour here, you know, sharing stories and thinking about it. And before we slip away today, Sequoia, is there any place, if somebody is feeling the itch to hear another one of your stories, where can they find you?
October 30th, we're having a storytelling night at the Cherokee Heritage Center in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. It's going to be, they have like an ancient village they have rebuilt there to show, I think it's about like 1800s. And we're going to be telling stories in the council house there. That's October 30th. It's a free event, and there's going to be scary stories told, and who knows what else. I mean, I do want to thank the lady that just got through calling in, because a lot of the stories that we tell are traditional, and they do have morals and lessons to them. But for the scary ones, a lot of times, you know, even though they don't sound traditional, there are still morals and lessons in them. A lot of them do have it, and some of the, even the one Aldrina shared. The spear finger is one of the monsters that's common among the Cherokee people. And so even some scary stories, you know, they are traditional. They have been handed down for years and years, you know, ages, I'd say. Like I said, the spear finger monster is a traditional creature.
And you know, Sequoia, we are at the end of the hour, and you know who we have to thank for some of these stories still getting to us even today are all of you great storytellers. I do appreciate you being with us, Sequoia, and also Eldrina. Thank you for the stories you've shared, and all the folks out there in Native America. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
The Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma features Choctaw-made merchandise online at ChoctawStore.com. You can own a piece of Choctaw culture delivered to your door, whether it's the works of Choctaw artists, unique apparel, accessories for your home or office, music, videos, and books, including the Choctaw language books. You can find it at ChoctawStore.com. ChoctawStore.com is proud to support Native Voice One.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanek Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.